This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim Rabbi arini kayfa tuhyil mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء وَاللَّهُ وَاسِعٌ عَلِيمٌ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ ثُمَّ لَا يُتْبِعُونَ مَا أَنْفَقُوا مَنًّا وَلَا أَذًى لَهُمْ أَجْرُهُمْ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you revive the dead," he said, "Do you not believe?" He said, "Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest." He said, "Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel continues pounding the besieged Gaza Strip for a second day after the end of its week-long truce with Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. Hamas says Israel has resumed its war on Gaza with the U.S. green light as renewed bombings have left nearly 240 Palestinians dead so far since yesterday. And a UNICEF spokesperson says inaction by influential countries is allowing Israel to push what he calls a war on children in Gaza. Israel continues pounding the besieged Gaza Strip now for a second day after the end of its week-long truce with Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. Fresh Israeli strikes have targeted residential buildings as well as areas where Palestinians have been taking shelter. The southern city of Khan Yunis has come under intense bombardment since Friday. Videos from the city show Al-Nasser Hospital overwhelmed with injured Palestinians, mostly children. According to UNICEF, Gaza is once again the most dangerous place in the world to be a child. The UN health agencies also warned that hospitals in Gaza now resemble a horror movie. Israel's resumed bombardments of Gaza and it's killed so far at least 240 people. That's in addition to the over 15,000, mostly women and children, killed prior to the ceasefire. Meanwhile, Hamas says that Israel and the U.S. are responsible for expiration of the ceasefire in Gaza.
We blame the failure on two sides, the Israeli and American sides. It was clear yesterday that the Israeli side wants to go back to fighting as several ideas were put forward by mediators, and we accepted three of them. And despite that, the Israeli side said no, no, no every time.
Hamdan said U.S. has given a green light to Israel for resumption of its atrocities in Gaza. However, he said Hamas is ready to respond to any serious mediatory efforts to try to cease the Israeli aggression. A spokesman also reiterated Israel's military captives in Gaza will only be handed over if all Palestinian prisoners are released. Now, there are currently over 8,000 Palestinian prisoners held in the regime's jails. Nearly 3,000 alone were arrested after the regime's onslaught on Gaza began on October 7th. A UNICEF spokesman in Gaza says that Al-Nasser Hospital in the territory is overwhelmed by wounded kids. James Elder says inaction by influential countries is allowing Israel to kill children there.
Ceasefire is over. We can already hear the bombing, and I'm at a hospital. There was a hit about 50 meters from here. This is the biggest still functioning hospital in Gaza. It's at 200% capacity. Yes, this is a hospital. The health system here is overwhelmed. This hospital simply cannot take more children with the wounds of war. There are children everywhere. These children are sleeping. There was a bomb literally 50 meters from here. I cannot overstate how the capacity has been reduced of hospitals in the last 7 weeks. We cannot see more children with the wounds of war, with the burns, with the shrapnel littering their body, with the broken bones. Inaction by those with influence is allowing the killing of children. This is a war on children. Clearly, words, clearly pleas from the world do not make a difference on those who have the power to stop the killing, the maiming of children. So let's at least look at the damage being done. This is Ahmed. He's three. Yeah. Ahmed's favourite sport, football. Ahmed's right foot amputated because of the destruction that caused to his house when family members were killed just a few weeks ago. The bombing has started again now. We cannot, in all good conscience, allow this war on children to continue. We cannot allow more children in Gaza to suffer as Ahmed, beautiful eyes, still face, still terrified with a look of a memory and something he will now have to learn to live with. It has to stop.
Presumption of Israel's aggression against Gaza has drawn widespread condemnations, with the United Nations Human Rights Chief calling it catastrophic.
You've just received a statement from the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights that I'll read out now. The resumption of hostilities in Gaza is catastrophic. We urge all parties and states with influence over them to redouble efforts immediately to ensure a ceasefire on humanitarian and human rights grounds.
The spokesperson stressed, as an occupying power, Israel is required under international law to ensure Palestinians access to basic needs such as food and water. UN Chief Antonio Guterres also regretted resumption of strikes and hopes that a ceasefire can be reached. Head of the Red Cross said renewed attacks bring Gazans back to what he described as a nightmarish situation. Robert Mardini warned that Gaza is in a very precarious state and civilians have nowhere safe to go. UNICEF also appealed for a lasting ceasefire and said inaction on Gaza is an approval of the killing of children. The UN agency stressed more attacks will lead to nothing other than carnage. The United Nations says that Israel will not renew a visa for its humanitarian envoy in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. UN spokesperson Stephane Dujarric said Israel has notified the body that the visa will not be renewed. Dujarric also dismissed as utterly unacceptable public attacks against the envoy. He stressed this may put the envoy's life at risk. Israel had earlier slammed the UN envoy as non-impartial. The regime has repeatedly accused the UN of bias. Back in October, Israel's ambassador to the UN called on the body secretary general to resign after Antonio Guterres said that October 7th did not happen in a vacuum. Also, later in October, the regime slammed a General Assembly resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it has hit several Israeli military targets in northern parts of occupied territories. Hezbollah said it struck and damaged targets with appropriate weapons. It said that there were also casualties involved. The group says its attacks are in response to Israeli crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel shelled several targets in southern Lebanon that resulted in the deaths of at least three civilians. Area along the Lebanese southern border has frequently witnessed exchanges of fire between Hezbollah and Israel since October the 8th. That's a day after the Palestinian resistance movements in Gaza launched Operation Al-Aqsa Flood against the Israeli regime. Pro-Palestinian rallies continue throughout the world on a daily basis, demanding an end to the Israeli war on the Gaza Strip. In the United States, dozens of protesters gather outside the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. Protesters shouted anti-Israeli slogans and called for an end to the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land. People in Lebanon's southern city of Sidon also took to the streets in solidarity with Palestinians. They're calling for a halt to Israeli aggression. Meanwhile, in the Jordanian capital, Amman, hundreds of protesters carried banners reading, "Resistance is our choice." The rallies came after the resistance movement Hamas called for demonstrations throughout the world on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in solidarity with the people of Palestine. We have Ashraf Shannon now ready in the besieged Gaza Strip city of Khan Yunis. Hello, Ashraf. If you can, please tell us what's going on out there this morning.
Yes, Danny. Israeli fighter jets and tanks continue to pound almost every part of the Gaza Strip. The attacks are concentrated. Their attacks on the southern, the Israeli attacks have concentrated mainly on the southern parts of the Gaza Strip, mainly Khan Yunis and Rafah. Since the end of the humanitarian pause, Israeli forces killed more than 200 Palestinians in Gaza. They also overnight destroyed four mosques, three in Khan Yunis and one mosque in Rafah, while the Israeli regime has informed the Palestinian Red Crescent Society that no trucks will be allowed to come in into the Gaza Strip from the Rafah crossing until further notice. This while the hospitals in Gaza, mainly in the southern part of Gaza, Nasser Hospital and the Gaza European Hospital, have announced that they cannot take any more injuries due to the overcrowding and the high capacity of injuries and patients inside those hospitals.
So, Ashraf, what does that mean? When hospitals start collapsing and when they explicitly say we cannot take any more patients, what happens at that point on to the wounded?
Well, basically, they've been doing this for more than a week now. They've been treating injured people and operating on injured people on the floors of the hospitals, which is unsanitary, but that's the only way they can do it. Now, when injured people come in, they have to treat them quickly and take them outside the hospital and inside the hospital corridors or even outside the buildings of the hospital on regular mattresses. And they've been trying to make makeshift field hospitals inside Nasser Hospital itself. So a lot of those who are inside the halls of the hospital have been taken out to the makeshift areas inside the yards of Nasser Hospital. As I said from the beginning, the Israeli regime is waging a war on the civilians of Gaza. They're waging a war on the health sector in Gaza and the education sector, on mosques and on churches. Basically, they want to have an exodus of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip somewhere towards the Sinai Peninsula. They've been talking about this since the beginning. The Israeli regime, Israeli senior officials have been talking about it. And even the U.S. officials, including U.S. Secretary Blinken, have talked about it indirectly.
And now, Ashraf, before we let you go, do we know to what level fighting has picked back up in the northern parts with respect to the Israeli regime coming into the besieged Gaza Strip on foot with Hamas, or the Palestinian Resistance Movement? Has fighting between the two on the ground in northern Gaza resumed?
Danny, the fighting since before the end of the humanitarian pause yesterday, there was already fighting around 5:30 a.m. The humanitarian pause ended at 7 a.m. And Israel started the attacks against civilian areas, prompting Hamas, the military wing, the Azim Qassam brigades, to retaliate against Israeli forces. And around dawn today, Hamas's military wing, the Qassam brigades, they fired three kamikaze drones at Israeli forces in the central part of the Gaza Strip. Heavy fighting continues as we speak, especially in the eastern parts of Khan Yunis, as Israel seems to be planning for land incursion into Khan Yunis itself.
Okay, thank you, Ashraf. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Joining us, that was Ashraf Shannon, joining us from the besieged Gaza Strip, the city of Khan Yunis, to be exact. Meanwhile, during the week-long truce in Gaza, 240 Palestinian prisoners were released in exchange for 80 Israeli captives held by Hamas. Newly released Palestinian inmates have spoken about the dire conditions they faced while in Israeli custody.
The situation inside the prison is not normal. It's a tragedy. It's like a ghost life. They said you were going for an investigation. When we were out to the yard, they told us we were going to be released in a soft deal.
What the prison authority did, such as beating, repression, aggression on prisoners, was so scary. Thank God the prisoners have high spirits. I hope all prisoners will be released soon. It was a surprise. I didn't expect to be released. This is because of God and the resistance in Gaza.
They cut off everything. They tortured us psychologically, physically, everything. I can't describe what happened. May God be beside the prisoners in other prisons. They beat us. There were people with bleeding eyes. Some people were beaten.
The city of Khan Yunis has been among the prime targets of the Israeli airstrikes this morning. Palestinians there describe the situation they are facing due to relentless air attacks.
We know their territory. They are territories. We know that their intention is killing and destroying our homes. What did they achieve with all this other than killing children? They have killed women, destroyed homes, and are wreaking corruption on the world. They cut off our water, our electricity.
What is this criminality? What is this terrorism? We don't do anything. We have a religion. We have Islam. We don't think of that stuff at all. We're not criminals. We're not terrorists. We just want to live in safety and want our children to feel safe.
Biden, this is all Biden. Biden is responsible for all of this. How do you sleep while children are dying?
What is it exactly? It is just a house where civilians fled from another area are staying. They're all young and children. Let all those Arab countries keep their weapons, tanks, and planes. We don't want anything from them.
President of the international charity group Doctors Without Borders has recently visited Palestinian territories. He said the situation in Gaza is unimaginable and inhumane.
For 7 weeks, we saw simply that the Israeli forces were killing people, children, entire families, and they are doing it wantonly. People trying to escape unpredictable bombardment, trying to find safety in a place where nowhere was safe. And now, over 1.7 million people are displaced, and they are living in the most cramped, chaotic, horrific conditions. This is unimaginable. This is inhumane. The situation today in Gaza, as you all are aware of, is catastrophic. It has gone beyond the what we call humanitarian crisis. It is a humanitarian catastrophe. At last count, nearly three quarters of the hospitals in the Gaza Strip are not functioning. Almost none in northern Gaza are functioning. And systematic attacks have destroyed the healthcare system. This brutal annihilation of an entire population's health system stretches beyond what humanitarian aid can fix. I have to make it very clear, doctors cannot stop bombs. We are already witnessing a humanitarian crisis with catastrophic proportions, and it will get worse if this violent onslaught resumes. People in Gaza need a sustained ceasefire now, and it is the only way to stop indiscriminate killings and civilian injuries and allow for the delivery of all this desperately needed humanitarian aid on a meaningful scale.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
The world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
In the limelight.
The brief suspension of the Zionist regime's bombing will allow civilians in Gaza a small amount of breathing room, but it will not address the larger issues of Israeli occupation and apartheid. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Palestinians have been spending sleepless nights under Israeli regime bombs again for close to 2 months now, but this time the level of brutality is unprecedented. Unlike previous wars and massacres in Gaza, this one is a combination of ethnic cleansing and genocide, with the direct involvement of former colonial powers. The Zionist regime's murderous campaign of bombardment against one of the most densely populated areas on Earth has killed mostly children and women. Since October 7th, the Zionist regime has flattened neighborhoods, destroyed vital infrastructure, and hit United Nations schools and camps where displaced Palestinians have been taking refuge. The entire population of Gaza has been denied access to water, electricity, medicine, and food. In the north, there are virtually no functioning medical facilities due to Israel's targeting of hospitals and clinics. According to Palestinian Health Ministry, close to 15,000 people have been killed, including around 6,000 children and 4,000 women. Thousands more are still missing, presumed to be trapped under the rubble, and the majority of the population has been displaced. The Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his right-wing fascist ministers have rejected calls for a long-lasting ceasefire, vowing to continue striking Gaza even after a temporary truce concludes. Growing global pressure was decisive in enforcing the U.S.-Israel axis to even accept a temporary suspension of the brutal bombing campaign in the besieged territory. One problem with the truce deal, as with previous truce initiatives, is that once again, the Zionist regime and the Palestinians, meaning oppressor and the oppressed, have been equated as two sides of a conflict. The fact that the Zionist regime has an actual army and disproportionately more firepower, and that it is an occupying power, were neglected, as usual, as was the stark difference in the death toll. As in the past, Palestinians are now expected to gratefully accept a period of calm, wherein the Zionist regime's bombs are not raining on their homes, even as its blockade continues to strangulate Gaza. From the beginning of this war, Palestinians have been demonized and dehumanized. The best they can be offered is a slow death within the confines of the largest open-air prison on Earth. Contrary to what mainstream media wants us to believe, the temporary suspension of airstrikes does not mean the immediate lifting of the blockade of Gaza to ensure adequate supplies of fuel, medicine, and other basic goods. Nor does it include provisions for ending Israeli occupation and apartheid. Rather, it will lead only to a slight improvement in living conditions under the Zionist regime's brutal war machine. In other words, breathing space for the more than 2 million human beings in Gaza, allowing them to bury their dead, drink water, find some food, and avoid starvation. As white liberal pundits insist on reiterating the Israeli mantra that equates Hamas with ISIS, largely ignored is the fact that Israel is a settler colonial power that seeks to ethnically cleanse an entire indigenous population in order to solidify and legitimize its colony. The context within which the Gaza genocide is being perpetrated, tribal bigotry, fascism, racism, exclusivism, is ignored. The Zionist regime's establishment's goal of annihilating Palestinians to manage the demographic threat and to maintain calm by mowing the lawn has been maintained since its 2005 withdrawal from Gaza. This is why we need more mobilization and grassroots pressure on criminal Western regimes to impose a military embargo on the Zionist regime. The protests of millions of people worldwide who have taken to the streets of London, Cape Town, Amman, Washington, and other major capitals in response to calls from occupied Palestine and the besieged Gaza Strip must be translated into action, an immediate ceasefire, humanitarian aid, and UN protection for Palestinians in Gaza. Without a military embargo and sanctions against apartheid Israel, Gaza will drown into the Mediterranean Sea along with its 2.3 million citizens. A dream the late Zionist regime's Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin once had. Complicit governments around the world must be compelled to act in accordance with the will of their people and hold the fabricated regime of Israel accountable for its war crimes.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
This is Gaza Under Attack, coming to you from the British capital, London. I'm Saeed Pourreza, with you for some of the biggest talking points coming out of the 50 days of an Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip and its ongoing incursions in the West Bank. A ceasefire deal between Hamas and Israel enters day five. The original four-day deal has now been extended until Thursday morning. The calm is revealing the scale of destruction caused by 7 weeks of Israeli bombardment, which killed more than 15,000 Palestinians and many thousands injured since October the 7th. The past 4 days have seen Hamas release 50 Israeli captives in exchange for 150 Palestinian prisoners. Another 20 captives will be released in the next 2 days in exchange for 60 Palestinians. As part of the deal, around 200 trucks of aid have entered Gaza over the past few days, but substantially less aid has made it into the north. Meanwhile, relief and danger and anger in the occupied West Bank, where Israel's mass raids and arrests are ongoing. The U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is on a tour of a divided Europe before flying to the region. Ireland, Belgium, and Spain have called for an end to the violence, while the rest continue to support Israel. So, can a divided EU have any meaningful policy on Gaza? Will the ceasefire become permanent, or will the war on Gaza resume with full force as Israel's embattled prime minister has vowed? How are Gazans doing during this lull? And who has won the war on social media? Joining me is British Palestinian journalist and political analyst Youssef Al-Halou here in the studio, and alongside him, independent journalist Vanessa Bealey, who joins the program via Skype all the way from Syria. Vanessa is a leading anti-imperialist voice and visited the Gaza Strip in 2012 and 2013. Thank you both for being here. Youssef, I want to start with you. It's good to have you back on the program, of course. An extension of this so-called truce, this time only into Thursday. Your thoughts, what did you make of it?
Well, temporary humanitarian pause is important for the people of Gaza to give them some relief after 49 days of relentless Israeli bombardment day and night, which killed approximately 20,000 so far. I think Israel was forced to accept this truce because it did not achieve any of its stated goal, which is to uproot Hamas and to release the hostages. And also because of the international pressure, Israel was forced to cease its military operations across Gaza because the world was horrored and shocked by the heartbreaking videos, the children torn to pieces, the unacceptable humanitarian tragedy that is being waged by Israel, collectively punishing the population. So I think this truce might be extended because, again, Israel is not going to achieve any of its goals. And I think also there is nothing else to bomb in Gaza. Mm-hmm. So if they resume this military operation, they will only kill civilians.
They will only kill civilians. Vanessa, what do you make of this extension of the truce by a couple of days, not permanently?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are ongoing negotiations in Doha, Qatar, right now with the head of the CIA, William Burns, and the head of Mossad, to see if there is some way to get further Israeli hostages released and to further extend the so-called truce. Although the Zionist forces in the north, I believe today, have actually broken the ceasefire and were responded to by the Qassam brigades. It's also worth noting that the humanitarian relief that is kind of trickling into Gaza is only 1/5 of requirements, even under normal circumstances, not under the absolutely horrific, horrendous circumstances that the Gazan people are now living with, and with largely the withdrawal of, for example, the UNRWA staff and officers from central and northern Gaza to southern Gaza. Euromed Monitor has made the point that effectively they're complicit with the Israeli plans to ethnically cleanse Gaza of Palestinians and to force them into the Sinai Desert, which has been the proclaimed plan by a number of Israeli government officials. So I'm less optimistic that the war is not going to start again, or rather I wouldn't call it a war, I would call it an ethnic cleansing. Netanyahu wrote a personal piece for the Jerusalem Post 2 days ago, and it was very clear from that piece that he perceives this as some kind of course, religious, cultist war. He's been calling the Palestinians Amalek. We know what that means. It means the extermination of all Palestinians that are, of course, encapsulated as Hamas, although we know that Hamas is not the only resistance faction that has risen up against the Zionist occupation. And that is one of the reasons, of course, that this war is being spun as Israel against Hamas, because it identifies the enemy, both in Western perception and in political spheres, in order to justify the continued targeting of the people of Gaza.
Exactly. The massacre of so many thousands of Palestinians, many of them children. Yusuf, you are from Gaza. You've lived there through repeated cycles of Israeli violence. Compare what happened in the past 7 weeks with all the previous ones. You reported from there, I recall. We were on air together.
Yes, indeed. I reported on the first Israeli war on Gaza, the second, 2008-2012. And those two wars that I experienced, it was a joke compared to this war. This is an all-out aggression, a war that no other wars. I think it's the worst massacre in our modern history since the Second World War. And the amount of bombs, we're talking about 1.5, the equivalent size of Hiroshima bomb dropped on Gaza.
Yeah. Flattening, in the span of 7 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, entire neighborhoods were flattened to the ground. And the northern part of Gaza especially is uninhabitable now. You're talking about 1.7 million people, they become internally displaced. So this genocidal war is Israel's revenge because it suffered a heavy blow on the 7th of October. And from the first moment, Netanyahu and his army generals, they painted a picture that Gaza is a hub of terrorism and Hamas is using Gazans as human shields, and children of Gaza are children of darkness, and people support the resistance. So he decided, okay, let's carry out carpet bombing, kill everybody. I heard some Israeli officials or even commentators, they said we must kill at least 100,000 Palestinians. Mm-hmm. So Gaza is considered the capital of resistance. So when people under occupation, under siege for the past 17 years, and they decided to infiltrate the border and revenge 75 years of ethnic cleansing and suffering and atrocities.
It was a reaction to that.
It was a reaction to that. Yeah, often the Western media, they don't mention the context. Yeah. They just focus on you condemn Hamas and what happened. So this war is a very devastating war, and I think it will take some time to rebuild Gaza. I was in Gaza 2 months ago, 2 months before the war. I documented my trip being away from London, from Gaza, and this beauty, this nice places, it's all vanished. Israel has a goal to depopulate Gaza and ethnically link the people of Gaza.
And you have family there too, right?
To Sinai. Yes, my family is there. My parents, siblings. They suffered like the rest of the population. We were not able to communicate for over a week, sometimes for over 10 days over the course of 50 days ago. They suffered not only because they survived, it's because every day they survived was a miracle. They had to go through this psychological impact and stress and bombardment and being starved. People cannot find now food, although they have the money.
Yeah.
Gaza is still under siege. Israel is still in full control of Gaza's airspace, territorial waters, and border crossings. Yeah. And the aid that is being trickled into Gaza is nothing. It's not going to alleviate the suffering.
Yeah. a drop in the bucket, for sure. And one of the places, or one of the many places that were bombed were UN facilities. And the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, has welcomed the extension of the ceasefire that would have expired Monday. He called the two-day pause, quote, a glimpse of hope and humanity in the darkness of war. He also commented on the possibility of Israel opening the so-called Kerem Shalom crossing that would enable much-needed aid to enter Gaza. The UN chief also speculated on the future of Gazan leadership post-war, comments that will surely rankle some Palestinians.
It's a glimpse of hope and humanity in the middle of the darkness of war. And I strongly hope that this will enable us to increase even more the humanitarian aid to the people in Gaza that is suffering so much, knowing that even with that additional amount of time, it will be impossible to satisfy all the dramatic needs of the population in Gaza. Well, first of all, I'm sincerely hopeful that it will be possible to have other crossings because they will facilitate the distribution and that will also facilitate the control by the Israeli side. So I'm very hopeful that this will happen. A Palestinian Authority, hopefully, in the day after, and as I mentioned, we will need to look seriously into how the transition takes place, and obviously the before has implications on the after, and so it is still early to know exactly how things will happen. But I believe that we need a Palestinian Authority with the responsibility to rule in Gaza, in the West Bank, and to create the conditions to make sure that the two-state solution moves forward, and this time moves forward in a way that is irreversible. And so, obviously, this will naturally lead to a strengthened Palestinian Authority, and I believe the international community should be ready to support it.
Vanessa Bealey, your reaction to Mr. Guterres' comments that they want the PA to take over in Gaza and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, really, that was, listening to it, I mean, it's just a huge word salad. You know, the UN appears to be completely powerless when faced with bringing to bear international law against the Zionist entity that has violated international law since its creation in 1947, effectively by the UN and before the 1948 Nakba. You know, the reality is that the UN should be, even at the beginning of this ethnic cleansing, the continuation of the 1948 and the 1967 ethnic cleansings, the UN should have actually been forcing Egypt, for example, to open the Rafah border to allow humanitarian aid to enter Gaza into the so-called safe southern areas. Of course, we know that those areas in the south are not safe, because not only have the convoys evacuating civilians from the north to the south been bombed, including ambulances, but also Khan Yunis and various other, and Rafah itself has been heavily bombed, and huge swathes of Khan Yunis and Rafah destroyed. So where was the UN from the 7th of October onwards, when it became absolutely clear what Israel was intending to do? They were announcing what their intentions were. So where was Guterres? Where was the UN? Where was the ICJ, the ICC, all of the so-called international law structures that should, at that point, from a humanitarian perspective, have forced the opening of Rafah? So I don't, you know, when somebody is saying to me, hopefully we can persuade Israel to open the Kerem Shalom crossing, yeah, I don't hold out much hope for it, because we haven't seen very much proactive pressure being put upon the Zionist entity by the UN ever, actually.
Mm-hmm. And we did see one UN official resign weeks ago, looking at the world body the way it was working and operating vis-a-vis this eruption and violence. Yusuf, again, the Palestinian Authority taking over in Gaza, we all know that the Palestinian Authority does not enjoy popularity or the support of all Palestinians. How do you see it happening, panning out, moving forward?
Well, they already announced that they are not willing to rule Gaza at the back of an Israeli tank. But as a matter of fact, there are no military posts, there are no police stations to come and rule Gaza. I mean, Gaza needs an urgent intervention to rebuild it, to relieve almost 2 million people. There is a war of starvation. When we're talking about the UN cannot force any UN resolution. You know, the UN headquarters is based in New York, and you know the stance of the U.S. administration giving Israel a green light. It's, as Vanessa said, it's powerless. You know, they cannot force Israel to stop. The whole world was
they can enforce resolutions when it comes to Iran and Iraq, but
yeah, this
when
is
it comes to
the
Israel,
double standard policy,
not.
Of course. The Israeli genocidal war in Gaza exposed their hypocrisy. The UN should have provided humanitarian aid, but they withdrew their staff from the northern part of Gaza, despite many calls to send this aid. We know that the international community is not serious when it comes to condemn Israeli crimes. If we compare that with Ukraine, of course, we know the double standard policy. The whole world was waving the Ukrainian flags. The flags of Palestine. In some countries, they were outlawed. There is attacks on Palestinians in the United States. So this comparison shows that there is injustice going on. There is hypocrisy. The United Nations must exert its effort and show that it implement its slogans of spreading peace and putting an end to conflict, armed conflicts. The Palestinian people in Gaza are the victims of 75 years of Israeli oppression, ethnic cleansing. But as a matter of fact, people, they have steadfastness, they have high morale. Whatever Israel does, they will not leave Gaza. They will not become refugees again. The international community must pressure Israel to abide by international laws and to implement even one UN resolution.
Yeah. Speaking of, again, I'm going to stick with the UN a little bit. And Vanessa, speaking of the powerlessness of the United Nations, I wonder if they have weighed in on this, but just yesterday, I think, it was Israel, the war cabinet, so-called, announced hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, to build new settlements in the West Bank, even as we await the further extension, perhaps, of this truce.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what has been going on in the West Bank, as Yusuf described it, has been a continued trickle ethnic cleansing. We've seen the destruction of infrastructure, the destruction of connecting roads, the bombing of mosques, which is a war crime. There's no Hamas in West Bank, and yet the ongoing detentions, arrests, killings, I think up to 200 now, have been killed both by the IOF and by the what I call the ISIS settler militia operating inside the West Bank. We know from, I think it was a documentary that was made 2 years ago, The Cold Stones of Justice, where Daniela Weiss, the leader of the settlement forces, basically, explained how she used to collaborate with Ariel Sharon back in the 70s to ensure that the settlements prevented the creation of a Palestinian state at any point. And so that is what the settlements are for, this creep annexation of Palestinian territory, including, of course, the Jordan Valley, which is being targeted both by Netanyahu, who's an expansionist, revisionist, Zionist, and Smotrich, his finance minister, who even talked about this in Paris earlier this year, which will then fully encircle the West Bank again with the apartheid wall and with Israeli occupation. So the settlement project is ongoing, even while Gaza is being ethnically cleanse. So it's clear that the intention is to ethnically cleanse all of Palestine. And of course, we had, I think it was the Arabic account on Twitter, or X as it's now called, with the hand holding the whole of Palestine with the Israeli flag, which was then deleted. So their intention has been very clear, even to the point where the heritage minister has talked about nuking Gaza, where various people have floated the idea of using nerve gas against the resistance and fighters also, in the tunnels.
Yeah, and also a screenshot of someone in Israel, I think someone in the higher-ups, of looking for Gaza on Google Maps and not being able to locate it, which, again, supports what you have been saying over the past few minutes. Thank you very much. And with those comments, we are going to wrap up this show. Many thanks again to my guests, Youssef Al-Halou and Vanessa Bealey, for their contributions. Gaza Under Attack will be back with more. Until then, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Thank you.
In the limelight.
After weeks of continuous Israeli regime bombardment of Gaza, the real death toll is likely much higher than what has already been reported. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, it took just one mention of the more than 15,000 Palestinians killed in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza for senior Netanyahu advisor Mark Regev to revert to the line that these are Hamas numbers. In a recent interview with Mehdi Hassan on MSNBC, Regev refused to acknowledge that the Zionist regime had killed children in its relentless and indiscriminate bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip, suggesting that the hours of heart-wrenching footage aired daily could not be independently verified. It is true that over the weeks of war in Gaza, the process of gathering and verifying information and footage has become extremely difficult and sometimes impossible. But the primary reason for this is Israel's ongoing push to control the narrative. The Zionist regime has totally sealed off the territory, refusing to grant permission for foreign journalists to enter the war zone. At the same time, at least 53 media workers have been killed in the war since October 7th, making it the deadliest conflict for reporters since the Committee to Protect Journalists began collecting data in 1992. Sharif Abdul Quddus, an independent journalist who worked on an award-winning film about the Zionist regime's killing of Al Jazeera correspondent Shirin Abu Aghele in May 2022, said in an interview with Democracy Now!, "You have a situation where you're killing most of the registered journalists in Gaza, and you are not letting other journalists in." Nadim Hawri, executive director of the Paris-based Arab Reform Initiative, told Middle East Eye that Israel is deliberately seeking to control information flow from Gaza. He added, noting that the world is witnessing a full narrative war with Israel deploying its usual arsenal, it is also trying to influence coverage through deliberate misinformation. He compared the situation to the lead-up to the 2003 U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, when claims from the Bush administration were parroted by mainstream media without scrutiny. This had devastating consequences then, and this is having devastating consequences today. Journalists and media workers who aren't directly killed by the Zionist regime's shelling have been paralyzed by the devastation of communication networks due to ongoing bombardments and the absence of fuel and electricity. At the start of the war, the Zionist regime's war minister, Yoav Gallant, declared a full siege on the population of 2.3 million people in Gaza, citing a fight against human animals, as he claimed. Other journalists have lost their families in Israeli airstrikes on civilian structures, including Al Jazeera correspondent Wael Dahoudo, who received news of the killing of his wife, son, daughter, and grandson while live on air. Despite the Zionist regime's blackout on Gaza, the casualty numbers provided by local authorities and international organizations are widely seen as reliable, just as they have been in past wars. On rare occasions, the Zionist regime's military has allowed reporters from international news networks to embed with its troops in Gaza on condition that they surrender their materials to Israeli authorities before publication. Mohammad Shahada, chief of communications at the Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor, told Middle East Eye, "Any journalist, foreign journalist, going into Gaza is going in on three conditions. Stick to Israeli tours, go where they want to go, and see what they want you to see." Journalists embedding with the Israeli regime troops have been barred from speaking with Palestinians, Shahada added, pointing to some of the international coverage of the siege of Ashrafa Hospital, which did not include Palestinian voices, even as thousands were sheltering inside the facility. The Zionist regime's chokehold on information from Gaza is just one aspect of its efforts to control the narrative. Israel's permanent representative to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, has taken his government's campaign against Hamas numbers to another level. While sitting at the Security Council, Erdogan recently launched a tirade of accusations against the UN itself, saying, "Every number from the so-called Ministry of Health is Hamas. Many UNRWA workers in Gaza are themselves members of Hamas," he claimed, adding, "The time has come to bust the myth of UN-supplied facts." His comments weren't the least bit surprising. Since the beginning of this war, more than 100 UNRWA workers in Gaza have been killed in Israeli regime attacks, some of which have targeted schools turned shelters funded and operated by the agency. This is despite the fact that all the agency's staff in Gaza are vetted and their names shared with the Zionist regime, Julia Tuma, spokesperson for UNRWA, told the New York Times. Alessandro Accorsi, a senior analyst of technology and conflict with the International Crisis Group, told MEE that in past conflicts, while the Israeli regime army has been slow to release casualty figures, the data has more or less aligned with that of the Gaza Health Ministry. But the current war is different. As the tide of international public opinion shifts in favor of Palestinians, the international blank check the Zionist regime had at the beginning of the war to fight Hamas is running out. Of course, he said, "If Israel had to confirm the death toll now, this would give a big push to calls for a humanitarian ceasefire." Indeed, after weeks of continuous Israeli regime bombardment of Gaza, many analysts warn that the real death toll is likely much higher than what has already been reported, due to the near impossibility of tracking and documenting every case. Thousands of bodies are believed to still be trapped under the rubble, while others have likely been buried without official notice. what the Zionist regime calls Hamas numbers could indeed be wrong, not because they are inflated, but because they do not capture the full extent of the horrifying reality on the ground in Gaza.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.